We'll adopt a Quad City family focus today on Scribble.
Welcome to Scribble, 30 minutes of conversation, comments, and reviews on reading and writing, editing, publishing, and selling books. I'm Roald Tweet.
And I'm Don Wooten. Mike Mickle went from broadcasting to publishing. He moves back to the microphone today, along with Garrison Keillor, on Scribble. You gave up broadcasting? Are you out of your mind?
No, I'm happy. It's been a few years, and you know, I really, while I loved my time in television, it was time for me to really focus on what my passion was. And my passion is all, I mean, since Karen Kelly said I do, and then the birth of each of our three children, my focus has been strictly on family. And so for me to be able to do something that we hope is promoting healthy, happy families on a daily basis is a good feeling.
Well, you're sort of like the Christian Science Monitor on steroids. you know, as far as happy news and good news. And I mean, I got to thinking the other day when we knew you were going to be on that you are like the one-man bands that I grew up with. You know, so the guy that had this contraption. I don't, have you ever seen a one-man band?
I have
this
indeed.
Contraption with a drum and a harmonica and a fiddle, and you play all kinds of instruments centering around the family.
I feel like it's more like a circus, and I'm the ringleader and all the entertainers combined.
Wait a minute, circus is copyrighted.
That's right, exactly. My bad.
Well, your website lists three almost separate businesses or companies.
Mm-hmm. It really does. You know, QC Family Focus has been around for just over 13 and a half years, and it's grown significantly during that time. So we're very proud of that. It's like our fourth child. It's about what I said earlier, what we're most passionate about. But then, Don, to your point, when you are a journalist, it's hard to get that out of your blood. So I knew that I still wanted to do something as far as telling people stories. And we decided to go down the documentary route. And so we have recently, just last year, we aired If You Only Knew, The Journey Through Teen Depression and Suicide on WQPT. We're nominated for a Mid-American Emmy. We were pretty excited about that. And now it's available on digital streaming sites. And then just recently, we had Human Trafficking in the Heartland. That was a three-year investigation.
I got to say, was an impressive one.
Well, thank you very much. Well, that means a lot coming from you. Now we're working on one called Down on the Farm, PHARM, heroin and pharmaceutical abuse. And they're all under the umbrella of the dangers they face. We're looking at things that are impacting teens and adolescents in our community and throughout the Midwest.
Gee, that you have to have quite an operation there in video resources, in editing. And do you do this on your own? Do you rely on other facilities?
No, we do everything on our own. We have our own staff. We have three videographers, a social media manager. We have a client consultant now. So we've grown some, too, since I left KWQC. So it's all in-house.
How in the world did that all happen? I mean, you left the television, but did you have anything else in place? I mean, how did you even survive getting this off the ground?
Well, the magazine was already in place. We had it for 5 years, so we had that income.
I guess that's right. I remember that.
And then Karen actually looked at me and said, okay, so now tell me, what will you miss about television? I said, well, I won't miss getting up at 3:30 in the morning and putting on makeup and a suit, but I will miss telling people stories. And she said, why do you have to stop? And it kind of went from there. We went out and we bought our first video camera, and we hired a guy that used to work with me at KWQC, and he was part-time. And it kind of started with marketing videos and then doing some social media videos. And then I knew that I wanted to do a documentary, and I had some friends in law enforcement that kind of whispered in my ear about the problem with human trafficking in our area, and I was stunned. So we started on that. We had been working on that for about 2 years when some people that I know within the school districts came to me and mentioned the prevalence of teen depression and suicide and asked if we would consider tackling that issue. So we kind of put the brakes on human trafficking, turned our attention to If You Only Knew, and then we finished that one and then went right back to human trafficking. So it kind of just sort of evolved through Karen's encouragement for me to continue to do what I feel like I know how to do and what I love so much, and it kind of went from there.
But, you know, the practical side of me says, how do you support yourself with this? What is the income stream that accompanies documentaries or so on?
We're always looking for more. That's for sure. That's for sure. I don't think anybody starves more than a documentarian, but that's okay. We look for sponsorships when it's airing on WQPT, and that helps. We had several companies come up and say, hey, we want to work with you on this. So that helped. And then now that it's available, If You Only Knew, The Journey Through Teen Depression and Suicide is now on Amazon and Google Plus and also on iTunes. So now people can download it, and we receive the majority of the money from the downloads from those.
Now, that's something that interests me, because in this last election, people were making a lot of money by putting up false news sites.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, how did they get sponsors? How did they get advertising? And I deduced, and this is just a deduction, the guy put up the false thing about somebody stolen ballots, and he got, I forget how many, 100,000 hits on the site, and apparently that attracted Google or something to put ads in that.
Google
ads. Is that the way it works?
It does work that way. If you get a certain number of followers, it's the same way with YouTube. You can, if you're posting videos and you have, I think the minimum is 1,000 people that are following your YouTube channel, then people start to look at it, advertisers start to look at it, and they want to put ads on there, and you can monetize videos on even YouTube as well.
Does Google just put the ads on there?
You know, we've never used Google ads, so I'm not sure, but I think so. I think that you have – I mean, it's your – proprietarily, I would imagine that you still have some say-so on what they can do, but Google's pretty savvy about finding your audience and catering to them.
But how do you keep all these things going? I mean, your interest has to be deflected from the printed page to the image.
I'm not going to tell you that it's easy, because it's not. My biggest challenge is that passionate about what I do, and I think whenever I'm able to meet with people face-to-face, I have a much better chance of getting them to either sponsor a documentary or buy an ad in QC Family Focus or buy a video project from us. So I spend a large amount of time out kind of beating the bushes and trying to get sales, trying to get people to buy into what we're doing. And when I'm over here selling, I'm not over here creating, and vice versa. So I find that there's kind of conflict within my own life on a regular basis. But what I've tried to do, you know, over the past couple of years is say Monday and Tuesday, I'm going to be making calls. I'm going to be following up with clients. I'm going to work on sales. Wednesday and Thursday, I'm going to be creating. I'm going to be writing. I'm going to be working on sitting next to my editor as we're working on the documentary. On Friday, it's kind of it's a potluck. It's whatever didn't get done Monday through Thursday that we just try to work on and then try to survive until the weekend.
So do you do contract work or ads for other organizations or people too?
You mean like media buys for them?
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, we've got a couple that we're working with right now where we try to help them. The one thing that I feel like we're really strong at, because most of my team has done this our entire adult life, is telling someone's story. And so it's finding their story and then marrying it across all kind of message, you know, whether it be social media, whether it be television, radio, print, and making sure that it is a consistent message. So I feel like that's a strong suit of ours. I will tell you that in the past couple of months, to your point, the fact that we are so busy and I'm constantly kind of chasing my tail, that I had a meeting with our team and said, moving forward, 99% of everything we do has to fall under the category of somehow promoting healthy, happy families, because that's our mission. And, you know, we can go make 20 bucks over here and 15 over here, but if we stay focused on what our mission is, I find that we're much more successful and life kind of calms down a little bit too.
Do you do writing for the magazine?
I do. I write an article every month. It's called Your Micklesworth. It's becoming a little more difficult as the kids get older, and of course now they can all read and they know what I'm saying about them.
So, the Irma Bombeck.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So I and the oldest is now 19 and 6'4" and 220 pounds. So I don't want to mess with him, right. Especially. But yes, we write about funny things that we have encountered, day-to-day challenges of being a parent. Anything from when Kyle was young and we took him Christmas shopping and we went into a Hallmark store and there were mints there. And I gave him a mint and he ate it and he didn't say anything. And I was going to give him another one. And Karen looked at me and said, do you really think he needs a second piece of candy? And I said, come on, lighten up. It's Christmas. And I handed it to him in a very loud voice. He went, no, Daddy, you fed me poop. And there were people everywhere. And I said, Kyle, that's not poop, buddy. Yes, it is, Daddy. You fed me poop. And every time I tried to convince him it wasn't, he got a little bit louder. And my wife turned around and looked at me and said, Merry Christmas, and walked away and left me with it. So there are stories like that that with three kids they have given me plenty to talk
right.
about, for sure.
Oh, dear. Well, but how about the other stories? Where do they come from?
A lot of them come from experts. Everything is – it's 100% Quad Cities or surrounding area. We have people in the health field. We have chiropractors who write for us. We have financial experts who write for us. We vet everything. A lot of that is, you know, if you buy a half page or a full page ad, as long as your message – it pertains to promoting healthy, happy families, you have the opportunity to write an article. And so we have some people that have been with us since day one, and they're still advertising with us and still writing for us. There are certain, you know, I don't want to name them, but there are certain businesses that we feel that don't fall in line with our mission, and we had to say no to some, to be honest with you. But they help with the content, and then we have a copy editor. Our client consultant and office manager is a great copy editor, so he helps do that. The last draft finally comes to us, and then Karen and I look at it just to check for any further mistakes.
You realize how radical that sounds.
It's
saying no to someone.
I know. I know. But, you know, we have almost 100 area schools, daycares, and preschools that send our magazine home to every family. They send them home in the kids' backpacks. And we don't take that lightly. I mean, there are just certain messages that we don't want to send to a second grader if he's thumbing through it. And we have a Just for Kids section in the magazine. So in many classes, we've heard that they open that up and let the kids, if they have spare time in the classroom, go ahead and work on the Just for Kids section. And the education dedication section before they send it home. So we want to make sure that, you know, we tackle some tough issues. We talked about the documentaries further back in the magazine, but sometimes a few $100 just isn't worth it when your reputation's on the line. So,
yeah. Why do you yourself seem to keep such a low profile?
You know, I was I had a high profile for years.
You did, yeah.
More than 18, and I just, you know, I did it. It was fun.
Is it deliberate or just is it just your preference to kind of stay out of the – even out of your own stuff?
You know, I'm voicing the documentaries, but, yeah, I think it's somebody else's time. I mean, I'm perfectly content. You know, I've always heard about the actors who turn into directors, and I kind of get it now. I mean, I enjoy the creating the stories and the interviewing people and the interaction with that. You're going to see a little bit more of me here in the next coming months because we're starting a new blog called The Journey from Dude to Dad, and there'll be video blogs. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to offer advice to new dads, and I may be hosting that, but that's still very much in the works. We hope to launch it in March. But I just haven't had a desire to return to television or to be on camera. Let's face it, I was never really skinny, but – as I get older, I like mashed potatoes and gravy, so I want to eat as much as I can and not worry about
it. The thing that makes me very happy not to be in television anymore, where I spent many years, is not having to put makeup on.
Oh, yes.
And now, with the new cameras and so on, you have to lay it on with a trowel almost.
You do. And then take it off with sandpaper.
Yeah.
I would agree completely. You know, and there were a lot of – we had, you know, 99% of the viewers are incredible people. But as a dad, I always worried about the 1%. And when we could kind of reclaim our lives, and I say reclaim it, but and Don, you know what I'm talking about. When you're on television for a certain amount of years in this market, it's a very welcoming community. But people still tell me, I mean, we're stopped in the store on a regular basis, and people are still telling me that they watch me every night.
I get that too.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a little creepy, isn't it?
For many, many years. Yeah, I never miss your TV show. I think, what TV show was that?
Have I forgotten something? Yeah, I know, and I get that all the time. And then I have very nice people who say, we miss you on television. And that's, mm-hmm. you know, it's great that, you know, they watched us. They saw a video of my wedding when, you know, Karen must have had a lapse of judgment and said yes. And then they came to our hospital room a day after each of our children were born, and they've seen the kids on Paula Sands Live. And so they became invested in our family, and I'll always be grateful for that. But I want to be a dad. I want to be a dad that's being able to help, you know, support my family, but I want to be a dad.
So do you do all of this out of your own home, Mike, or?
We actually have an office. It's a very small office, but we have an office at 700 West River Drive. It's inside the River's Edge, the old Quad City Sports Center, for those who have been here for a long time. And so we, because we got, as we started growing, it just seemed a little odd to be bringing in employees and sending them down to my basement. There was a little Silence of the Lambish for me, so I decided that maybe we should let them have their own spot, and we were able to work out a deal with Davenport Parks and Rec, and so they're down there. I do a lot of mine at home still, because when the kids are at school, Karen's at work or busy with something else, I have that quiet time to just be creative, and so I enjoy working from home, but I still have a presence down at the office.
Yeah, when I was working trying to animate stills, I would work all night long in my basement with that blasted Bolex camera, you know, opening it, rolling it back, and then to get the fades from one thing to another. Yeah, you wind up doing a lot of your work at home.
You do, and you have a lot more patience than I do to be able to sit and work on that for that length of time. I find that I still have to get out and be out and about, even on a day when I'm trying to go A through Z through the alphabet and contact all the advertisers, the regular ones, and remind them that the date is coming up for them to submit their ads and articles. Usually by the time I get to the letter G, I got to drive to the post office or something. I got to get out and get some fresh air and then get out of the chair for a while.
Well, we're glad that you came indoors long enough to chat with us today, Mike.
My pleasure.
Mike Mickle, Quad City Family Focus, and documentaries and blogs and Lord knows what. Just keep your eyes open. Mike will be showing up somewhere.
Thank you.
And we're glad you showed up here, Mike.
My pleasure.
And now we'll take a break to visit Garrison Keillor and the Writer's Almanac. Support for Writer's Almanac on WVIK comes from the Mississippi Valley Regional Blood Center, working together with volunteer donors to provide blood products and services to hospitals throughout the region. Information at bloodcenter.org. Well, that was an interesting bit of conversation with Mike Mickle.
That certainly was.
He's doing all sorts of things.
Yeah, well, as I said, I saw that documentary of his, and it's stunning on mm-hmm. human trafficking.
Yeah, you don't think such a thing is possible in the community you live in.
Well, or even anywhere. It is amazing the extent to which it exists.
Yeah, I know. So many people assume, well, we all do, we assume that the life we lead is the normal life, and that's pretty much the pattern for everybody, and it absolutely is not. We all live in different layers. It's one nation, one community, but there's so many different layers of behavior and occupation and understandings and so on, and we're not inclined to reach across those layers, understand other people and what's going on. So it's really important to have things like that brought to your attention. You really don't know your community as well as you think you do.
I think that's right. You know one little aspect of it.
Well, you know, we see the same people over and over again, go to the same places over and over again, and there's a whole other world that we never touch. I keep thinking of all the restaurants I've never visited.
Right.
But, yeah, that's he's doing great work. But you're doing work, too. I mean, you're trying to keep up with all the recommendations people give you for books.
Well, do you want a serious book, a fun book, or a kind of interesting book? Let me start with the fun book.
Okay, fun.
Because it
fun is always
harkens
fun.
Back to Christmas, and which is rapidly receding. Someone has finally done a history of Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, subtitled An American Hero by Ronald Lankford, Lankford, Jr. I think a lot of us know that Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer was created by Montgomery Ward's as an advertising campaign in 1939. They were looking for – they wanted something to hand out to kids that was cheap but that kids could take home. And they asked one of their advertising guys, Robert May, to do a little story. And he invented Rudolph with a red nose and so forth and so on. And it was immediately successful. So they kept doing it. And but that isn't, of course, the end of the story. It turns out, first of all, it almost never got published because the Ward's executives were worried about the red nose might mean drunk. And you could misread that, right? It would be politically incorrect. But it survived the executives, and it went on to become a Gene Autry song, and then it became movies. I mean, you know, how much advertising, how much of what we consider old American folklore, Paul Bunyan, for example, was invented by a St. Paul lumber company to sell lumber.
Yeah.
And his stories about Paul Bunyan. Well, by the time I was growing up, that was old-fashioned myth. And nursery rhymes in England, too, go back often to real events that are being made fun of or parodied. But this is an interesting book, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, An American Hero.
Yeah, I think of in England, they used to sing, "Hark, the herald angel sings, Beecham's pills are just the
thing." Right.
It's a diuretic mild,
right.
Two for man and one for child. Advertising rules us.
It does, and in fact, it always has.
It always has, but now through television. Boy, through television, it's amazing. We live in a television-mediated world, and it is more real to people than reality. You see more of television, and you take more of, and yet all of that is concocted. It used to be live, but now everything is taped and crafted and so on. It's just amazing. I marvel at how we live, and Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Well, you mentioned before Santa Claus was...
The Santa Claus we know and love with the jolly red, white beard and red outfit saying shh in front of the fireplace, what does he have in his hand? A Coke. That was a 1920s Coke ad.
And that gave us our image of
Santa Claus. That gave us our image of Santa Claus.
And that gave us all the time we have today. What's the name of that book?
Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, An American Hero.
Okay. And that does it for now. Roll and I'll be back next week, and we hope you will too for the next edition of Scribble.